That's really good because the hotter I get, the worse. Like, I'm already not that good. Sometimes I have brain flubs all the time anyways. When
Yeah.
I'm hot, it's like about a billion times worse. And I just like start replacing words with nonsensical words, and it's no good. So.
That's my favorite part. Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the podcast, the movie podcast that is burning alive.
Well, yeah, as is the whole Western United States.
Yes, it is too damn hot.
Yeah, yeah. I have eaten my brain as ice cream several times in the last little bit as it's melted from my skull. It's been a quite an adventure.
Yeah, so how hot is it over there in Portland, Richard Wally?
I think the hottest it's gotten is 98 or 97. It's just mostly that, I don't know. It's kind of weird because it's not like humid. It's just sticky here.
Yeah.
So.
I've been in Portland in the summer. I kind of get it, but it was not nearly that hot when we visited you.
No, it's pretty damn warm, and kind of had an adventure this weekend in the warmth, so it was interesting to say the least.
Are you going to introduce me?
Oh, I could. I guess I could. I guess you're a person, Cassidy Robinson.
No, last week you decided I wasn't a person.
Oh, okay.
Remember?
Yeah, I forget. I need to write these facts about you down.
Yeah. Well, you might be metaphorically burning alive, but here in Pocatello, Idaho, we're literally burning down. We've had three huge brush fires near our city. Like you remember last year, we had the famous Charlotte fire that took down like 20 homes. These fires are about the same size. They just haven't been directly in populated areas yet, but one is still growing.
Ooh.
They were able to put out the first two, but yeah, there's one that's up to like 300 and something acres right now.
That's a lot. Wow.
Yeah. It's still going. So tomorrow, by the next time we talk, there may not be a Pocatello.
Oh, well.
So that's
well,
exciting.
Good thing you were moving soon, right?
Sure.
Then you don't have to worry about moving your stuff.
Yeah.
On the positive side.
Because I won't have stuff.
Yeah, there you go.
Or a body. I'll just be a ghost.
Well, that's one way to look at it. I have a haunting podcast.
So what is this exciting story you have for me then?
Oh, no, just my little adventure. We bought tickets a couple months ago for a Neil Gaiman book tour, and it was at the Crystal Ballroom in downtown Portland, which does not have air conditioning, and so there was 899 other souls roasting alive at the top to watch Mr. Gaiman talk about his book and talk about stuff he's going to be doing and about himself and have a wonderful time while we were slow cooking alive.
Yeah. So was it like totally occupied, just bodies melting as he's trying to, and of course he's like the ultimate pale black haired goth king who probably still had like on a black long coat and didn't seem affected at all, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, he's not that bad. I mean, he's not like Clive Barker or something. He did tell us there was a question though, because there were you could write your questions down and put on a note card, and several of them that would get answered. Most people actually use them to fan themselves though. But somebody asked whose fans were weirder, his or Clive Barker's,
Oh, it has to be
and
Clive Barker.
oh, he went into detail about how Clive had received like cat's heads on swords and bags for presents, people cutting themselves and asking him to sign their books in blood, and I was like, oh my gosh.
So keep that in mind, Richard, if you when you're thinking about writing some horror fiction, if it does catch
Yeah.
on,
No, I
you might have to stare into the abyss literally.
That was the first thing I thought. I was like, you know, there's probably a lot of these people who just enjoy the genre. They don't actually want to see the genre.
They don't want to interact with it on a personal level every day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
Well, I posted a picture on our Facebook of you getting your book signed by Neil Gaiman because I
Yeah.
figured some people might be excited by that. And you decided to retaliate quite
I did.
unfairly
No, I thought it was pretty fairly, but go
with
on.
the one of the worst pictures of me ever taken when we visited you last year in Portland.
Yeah, but you know what? What's funny is it's gotten double the attention most of our news articles get. So, you know, I don't know. In one way, it's bad. In another way, oh, well, we got more attention that way, so I guess that's fine.
I guess if we're ever
I get.
having a slow week, I don't know. Just remember, I still have those pictures of you and Keith in drag.
Oh, I have plenty of those. You can put those up. I'm not
You're
afraid. I
not as
have one
easy to
of.
embarrass.
I
Actually,
could
we
put
have
the one
the
of me on top of you trying to kiss your face and you holding me back. That's a good one.
That is a good one. Maybe we'll make that our profile pic.
That's fine. Yeah, go for it. No, they're. Yeah, I'm not that easy to embarrass. I was thinking, though, maybe we should make our podcast a floppy hats, you know, Cassidy and Floppy Hats podcast. It's apparently a popular subject, so.
More floppy hats.
Yes,
That's what
yes.
the people are clamoring for. Well, I had a little bit of an adventure this weekend. Nothing quite that exciting, other than my town is burning down around me. But I went to. I decided. I've never done it before, and I figure if I'm not going to be living here much longer, I should give it a go. So me and a couple of friends went to Fort Hall, and we played bingo.
Oh, okay.
I did not
Yeah,
win.
that was one of those things you just had to get out of your system.
Well, I figured if I was ever gonna like gamble, just throw money away, I'd at least want to do it in something where you have a better chance of winning. And like, actually,
Okay.
I could totally see how people would get addicted to this because your odds are so much better because there's like maybe 150 people who play, probably less. They just keep calling out letters until somebody wins. So your odds are 1 in 100.
Sure.
For 12 or so separate games. And
That's
some
not
of them
bad.
go over like $1,000. And I so got close. I almost won $1,000, Richard.
Wow, listen to you. Holy cat. 1-800 no gambling or whatever that number is. You need to
No,
look that up.
it's good that I'm not that I just discovered this now. I could see it becoming a problem. Of course, we were definitely the youngest people there and the only people who had any kind of spark of life in their eyes left. Although that we were really struggling to figure out how to play and we got there kind of late because we're 20 something fuck ups.
Did a nice old lady show you how to play?
She did.
Okay. Okay, I was right. Okay,
We were
good.
very appreciative because we were looking at the boards. We're like, they're going so fast. What do I do? And she would stop us every 12 minutes. She's like, we're on this game now. It's like, oh, okay, thank you. Course, the fucking bitch ended up winning and we didn't.
Yeah, my grandma goes out and plays all the time, so
I could see that.
yeah.
It's sort of a grandma type thing to do, which is probably
Yeah.
why I liked it.
Well, you know, it's something to do.
In Pocatello, yeah.
Yeah. No, I had a fine roasting afternoon with Mr. Gaiman.
A little bit cooler.
A little bit, I'm
But
not gonna lie.
you didn't have $1,200 on the line.
No, I didn't. But I got several books signed by him, so
Which ones?
I got well, besides, you got two copies. Well, you got a copy each, so me and my wife went, of his new book signed. And then I also got my Absolute Sandman signed and a copy of American Gods and Anansi Boys.
All right. Well,
So now that I got that confession out.
we do have to move on, and we'll begin talking about our movie news before we review The Bling Ring, which is the movie that we are covering together this week, and I will be reviewing The Heat by myself.
Ooh.
But I'm reading this news article on IndieWire right now. Apparently, Kevin Smith says he won't Kickstarter for Clerks 3. Instead, he's going to be waiting on the Weinstein Company to greenlight it for Sundance 2014.
Yeah, I read about that. I guess he was originally thinking about maybe doing some crowdsourcing for Red State, but then didn't because he was embarrassed and didn't want to ask for handouts. So,
Well, he ended up pretty much financing Red State all by himself. You know,
right.
he didn't even pay for advertising. He'd made the movie, used Twitter and social networking to advertise, had very select screenings, cut his own trailer probably, and then just kind of toured the movie himself and then released it on DVD pretty quickly. So it didn't have much of a release, but it was one that he could completely 100% control.
Yeah.
Although I figure if he's going through the Weinstein Company on this one, he probably means to have a little bit more of a legitimate release. I mean, Clerks 2 had a pretty big release.
Guess we'll see. Yeah.
What do you think in general of all of this backlash on Kickstarter as a thing? Like when it first came out, and Indiegogo and some of these other crowdsourcing websites, it was like kind of the new hot thing. And then like, you know, people were getting this little project funded and that little project funded and like, you know, local art or sometimes like people trying to get like internet web comics released in book format, that sort of thing. And then all of a sudden these movie people kind of came in and started, you know, like Zach Braff and Veronica Mars and all of these things and getting millions of dollars really, really fast. I don't know. I think it's kind of strange that people have taken such a hard turn on that stuff and calling these people like frauds and liars and assholes and thieves. When these projects wouldn't have been funded any other way. I can see like saying that if like they were getting deals and they're like, no, I want to have more control, so I'll do it this way. But you know, like I don't know if the Veronica Mars movie would have ever happened, or else it would have happened years ago.
No, I agree. I personally, with the Kickstarter thing, I personally think movies shouldn't be in the running. Maybe small pieces.
Okay.
Some of these bigger things maybe not. But yeah, things like Veronica Mars, that movie wouldn't have got made without
But
Kickstarter.
that's technically a big movie. Like, I mean, it's gonna
No,
have a
I
star in it,
agree.
and everyone's
I
in the
just think,
industry.
to me, I guess what I worry about is abuse from I mean, if it has enough of fandom and people feel strongly enough about it, sure. But I guess I worry about it from a studio standpoint, just because I'm like, well, are they going to be, how are these people, how their funding is going to go towards it? I mean, are we just like, I'm just more worried about the abuse that could go towards it.
Yeah, I mean, I could
But,
definitely see this getting dark if this continues like that. But I mean, I don't know. I just think people are at this point really quick to judge these projects because, you know, it's like look at like what happened with Behind the Candelabra, you know?
sure.
Like he eventually did get the money to get it made and he got it probably released in a way that actually potentially more people will see it. But I don't know. I think the studio system is so weak and timid at this point that there's, you know, even if you're an established producer or whatever, you might still have a really hard time getting original work off the ground. But we'll move on. We'll move on from that. What do you have for us?
It's kind of news, I guess. I mean, as much of news as the other 5 billion are, anyways. So apparently, there's going to be another reboot of the Terminator, or at least somewhat of a reboot of the Terminator franchise. They're not going to continue it with Christian Bale in the future.
Yeah,
they're actually going into the past, and apparently, a part of the rumor mill in that is that he's going to be a human, and the Rock is going to be the Terminator sent back.
Okay.
Apparently, the Arnold's playing this older fellow that protects the Connor family or whatever, and the fact that they want the Rock basically says, oh, they do want to reboot the series, because
yeah,
that's what you do anymore.
Well, honestly, I mean, I don't need another Terminator movie. I really don't. I need another Terminator like I need, you know, a metal rod stuck through my urethra. But
right,
I kind of would like to see the Rock be the Terminator. I'm not going to lie. That's not the worst idea.
Well, it's also supposed to be set like in the 1950s or something like that too. Is like one of
That's the other bit of info is that it's going to be sort of a period piece. So, I mean, whatever.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm not completely. I mean, there are other ones that I roll my eyes at a lot more. But I was kind of fine with Apocalypse. I mean, I don't know. McGee's movie wasn't like this, like, you know, the best movie ever, but I don't know. I prefer the Robocalypse. I prefer, you know, I'd rather go that route because you see something.
Yeah.
At least a little different. I don't need the rehashings of 1 and 2 where somebody comes back from the future. And so.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I didn't hate Salvation. And that's kind of controversial to say because a lot of people really fucking do. But I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was necessary, but I thought, you know, considering that, it was about as good as we could expect.
No, I agree. I mean, I was entertained by it for the most part, but the other thing, like I said, I'd rather see it change and go somewhere else. I don't need to see him, you know, a big muscular robot go back in time again to try to kill the Connor family.
Again.
We've seen
that. Yeah.
Yeah, again. Like, I don't know. To me, there needs to either be a departure or something needs to go differently or just not make another one.
Plus, so, we already got a really good Terminator reboot last year with Looper.
Yeah, more or less.
Okay, so the other news item I have here from Entertainment Weekly, Christian Bale says he won't be Batman in a Justice League movie. So obviously, you know, Dark Knight Rises last year, this year Man of Steel is trying to kind of coattail the success of the Nolan franchise. But they really want to get this this Justice League stuff off the ground. And, you know, they really have, I think, personally, they really are going to have to divorce themselves from that Nolan universe to successfully do that. To be able to pull in people like Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Green Lantern again, however they want to do that. I don't know what they're going to do. They really got to reestablish this universe and do it quickly and wisely. So I think it's good that Christian Bale isn't going to be Batman for the Justice League.
I do too. We kind of had this moment at the start of the episode or before we even started where I was like, I don't really feel like there's a lot of news out there. And this is my reason why I didn't really feel like this was much news. We already knew from Nolan that he wasn't going to, they're going to reboot the character. We already knew from the company. And so for people to keep being like, but what if Christian Bale is still Batman? It's like, oh my gosh, let it go, guys.
Yeah.
It was a great series. Let it go on. Let it do something different.
Yeah.
But no, yeah. Christopher Nolan series doesn't wouldn't fit into a Justice League scenario to me.
Well, and most of the characters. I mean, like, you could probably, like, get Green Arrow, a few of the other more naturalistic ones, but as soon as you start heading in outer space, and, I mean, you know, even with Superman, it's divided people on whether the Nolan tone works for it. I mean, I thought it was, I liked it enough, and I think they could still use that character in an in a differently pitched movie, but yeah, I don't, they can't do that for everybody, and they certainly can't do that for Batman.
We'll see what happens. Yeah, I have no idea. Well, I mean, that's the thing too, is they tried so hard to ground it in reality. How do you ground it in reality with the space alien that can punch through the earth?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I and honestly, I don't think that that's what needs to be done with every single superhero. Like with Superman, that would be somewhat ridiculous. And with Justice League, I mean, you're even getting further out there. So
yeah,
I have no idea. We'll see how they pull in all these other parts. I did see a little thing about the George Miller, the guy who did Rogue Warrior, when he was originally going to do his Justice League movie for a while ago. Apparently his stuff was way, way out there.
I could only imagine. Probably brings like Tina Turner and Beyonce are going to do like a random musical montage in the middle of it.
You know, there's part of me that wants to see that. Like, I know that it would be horrible, but there's part of me that almost isn't like, man, like, let's just do some, I don't know.
Yeah, that's almost like the Tim Burton Superman with Nicolas Cage. It's like, I'm glad it didn't happen, but don't you kind of wish you, in a parallel universe, you could see what that would have been?
Yes, exactly. That's a good way to say that. In a parallel universe, I would like to walk into a theater and watch it. In my own, though, I'm kind of like, I don't know about that. That would be a lot of waste of money. So
a lot of waste of something.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's my turn for the pet topic.
Yes, it is.
And I was kind of thinking about this because I've been, you know, conversing with different people on different message boards for some of the other podcasts I listen to. And you hear a lot about, like, the difference of taste and opinion when it comes to movies from when you're a certain age to another age. And I like to think that, you know, I mean, we probably still have a few left in us, but we've kind of come over the hump of the major coming of age moments and times in our lives, because we're headed toward 30 pretty quickly. So has there ever been a moment, or has there ever been a movie, possibly more than one, where your opinion of it drastically changed, you know, from either loving it to hating it, or not being able to appreciate it to liking it a lot?
Right. Well, I can't, I'm sure there are, because there's been those moments, we've talked about them. I can't think of any, like, right off the top of my head. But in general, yeah, there are a lot of movies from when I was a kid, I was like, man, that was kind of cool. And I thought it was cool at the time, but now I've revisited and been like, wow, that was a piece of shit. No, I mean, I think your tastes do change as you grow. I mean, some of them you kind of maintain. Like, I don't think I'm ever going to lose my affinity for B movies, per se.
For what?
But I have, for, like, B movies.
Sure. But your reasons for liking them have changed.
Yes, exactly. That's kind of part of it. I mean, there's tons of things that change.
Yeah.
One thing that changed for me specifically is I did take film classes, and they, you know, some people say it's for the worse. I disagree. Personally, I prefer how I watch movies now, and I like that, you know, I can enjoy a broader perspective.
Yeah.
Besides that, too, there's a lot of movies when I watched that as a kid, I was like, wow, that was boring as hell. But now I can watch and be a little bit more like, eh, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still movies I can totally watch for, like, nostalgia purposes.
Sure. Sure. Like, I, you know, the one I always go to, and I think we talked about this last week, maybe on our own, is Space Jam. You know, we are 27 years old, so we were exactly the right age for when that movie came out. It was marketed directly to us, and it's one of those things where you can only appreciate it if you were exactly that age. And there's a whole generation that, like, loves this movie and can only think of it in a positive light. But if you really, like, divorce your mind from the nostalgia factor of when you were a kid watching it and you were a huge fan of all of those things, basketball and Michael Jordan and the Looney Tunes and all of that stuff and all of the crazy genre mashup stuff that's happening in the movie, if you just look at it, it's actually one of the, like, the most cynically made horrible screenplays, one of the worst things ever made, really, honestly. But it's I just can't hate it because of exactly that age I was, and now I look at it as just being like this bizarre thing. Like, it is so, it is a horse built by committee, and it's one of the, like, strangest, weirdest experiments that, like, actually got greenlit and released.
Well, it wouldn't also, I mean, at the time, like, we've talked about this, how, you know, like, the 90s basketball affinity.
Yeah.
Like, there's not that kind of a love for sports anymore. Or
sports heroes.
Yeah, for sports heroes at that grand of a, you know, or you make a movie with him in Looney Tunes.
Yeah. I don't think nowadays you could have, like, LeBron James in an Adventure Time movie.
I like the idea, but, I mean, no, no, it's not the same. So,
but at the time, I don't know, it, like, totally made sense. Or, like, you could have Vanilla Ice in Ninja Turtles and, you know,
it'd be fine.
And it'd be fine. But now it just makes it, like, intensely
Jay-Z
dated.
Jay-Z and Transformers or something like that now. I don't know.
That wouldn't surprise me, actually.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that's about the same.
But yeah, I mean, can you think of any specific examples where either love, hate, or hate love? I mean, I know for me, there were, you know, at an early age, I was probably in my late teens or so, and I was just kind of getting into, you know, film with a capital F. And I kind of saw, like, some of P.T. Anderson's movies, and I saw Magnolia for the first time when I was probably, I want to say, 19 or so, and I didn't love it. I thought that there was clearly some talent involved, and there's a lot of really great scenes, but I thought the movie as a whole was kind of a mess, and to an extent I still kind of think that. But when I revisited it years later, and that was sort of my first impression of P.T. Anderson, so I always sort of, you know, up until I saw There Will Be Blood, and then I went back and watched, like, Boogie Nights and some of his other movies, I always kind of was like, ugh, P.T. Anderson. And then when I rewatched Magnolia after seeing and liking some of his other movies, it, like, I kind of understood a bit more what his sensibility was. And I ended up appreciating it a lot more. But I don't know if I've ever gone, like, a full-on, I mean, other than, like, kiddie movies that there would be no way that I could appreciate now.
Right.
I don't know if there was a, you know, a really terrible movie that I loved. Oh, does Blank Man count?
Blank Man? probably. I don't know. I see, that's the thing too. I like stuff like that, like Blank Man. Yeah, that was out of my memory until just now. Thank you.
Or Meteor Man.
Oh wow! Yeah.
We lived in a generation where we were starving for superhero movies when they didn't exist, so we would get anything that looked even remotely close to, like, a superhero movie.
Yeah. You know, with Blank Man specifically, I'd probably watch it and be like, that was really stupid, but there'd be a part of me that still kind of enjoyed it because I, you know, the nostalgia factor. But
yeah.
But I really don't. I can't think of anything right off because there's like one movie I liked a lot as a kid, but I still kind of like is Little Nemo, the
Yeah, sure.
anime version of that kid's story. But I don't know. I can't think of anything that I like abhor. There's definitely things I've watched and been like, that's definitely not as good as I remember it.
Yeah.
Swamp Thing, like the original Swamp Thing movies. I had a whole thing for him when I was a kid for a long, for like a year. And yeah, those definitely aren't as good.
Didn't.
But I mean, that goes back to the whole wanting superhero monster or whatever thing.
Sure,
But
sure. I mean, those were quite different than the comic book, the Swamp Thing movies.
vaguely, yeah.
I mean, there was really super low budget, but I mean, beyond that, you know.
I mean, they were different than the Alan Moore run for sure,
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean they have some pretty big similar. I mean honestly they're better than a lot of the other superhero movies from those eras, which isn't saying much, but
Yeah, no kidding. Another one that I thought of is, and again, it's kind of like kid vid that, so it sort of shouldn't count. But when I started working at the video store again, and we're only allowed to watch PG movies and below, and every once in a while we could push for a PG-13 if we're really careful, in the store while we're working. And so I'd go like rummage the kids and the children's section, family section, looking for, old stuff that I loved that I could kind of look at again or revisit or just kind of have fun with as background noise. And I remember when I first started working at the video store, I grabbed Milo and Otis because
Oh,
I just
okay.
remembered loving that so much as a kid. And it's like, oh yeah, this is totally on. And then I put it in, and it like just this dorky movie about a cat and a dog, and it's narrated by this British guy doing goofy voices the whole time. And it's like,
Yeah, I
I
probably
didn't
I
expect
would
that.
have to go. I would still go back to nostalgia for that for me, probably.
I thought I
As a kid,
would.
I loved that
No,
film.
me too.
Loved.
I really thought I would. I was like, I'm so ready for this. And then I was watching, and it's like, I just don't remember it being like this.
I'm sure there are tons of films. I'm sure Homeward Bound is pretty stupid. I'm sure there are a
You mean
lot of
that
those
that
movies.
bat dog joke just didn't kill you?
Maybe as,
Which,
maybe, yeah, I don't
I mean,
know.
for them, I have a fairly decent memory, especially of movies I saw as a kid. So, for the most part, which is why Milo and Otis surprised me so much. For the most part, when I rewatch kid movies, even though I can see with my eyeballs and with my adult brain that they weren't good, I still can like, I remember it so well that it's like, well, no, yeah, I know what I'm getting into.
See, for me, no. Like a lot of the kids' movies, especially, like I just like took those in, digested them, they went right out the other end for me as a kid. It's the movies that I probably was too young to see and had like grown up like themes and stuff like that that really kind of stuck with me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I tend to forget a lot of the movies like I watched as a kid until like I'll see like random bits of them somewhere and be like, oh yeah, that was a thing.
Well, has there ever been a
I'm sh
movie where, and I have a few of these, where when you were a teenager, when you were a certain age, it just was like really felt important because it was like, I don't know, like you were introduced to a certain kind of genre trope for the first time or something. And
Sure.
then you go back to watch it like our age now, and it's just like doesn't hold up as well. Or you see its thematic cracks or whatever. For me, that movie's Donnie Darko.
Okay.
'Cause I like when I was a teenager, as all teenagers, when I worked at the video store, that was one of our, you couldn't keep it on the shelf. I mean, it was rented consistently all the time. And people would come in and they'd be like, "Do you have Donnie Darko in?" And I'd type it in the computer, like, "Sorry, it's checked out." And they're like, "Oh, why is it always checked out?" I'm like, "Because every day someone's turning 16."
Right. See, that's interesting. That was never a one for me as a teenager. Like, I know it was for everybody else as a teenager, but I don't know. I just was like, I guess.
I mean, I still think that there's some good stuff in it.
Sure.
And it's not a poorly made film, but I just, it's like, once I saw David Lynch movies and then I watched it again, I was like, oh, so he's okay.
Sure.
I'll quickly review The Heat, which I saw and you did not, before we move on to The Bling Ring. I had to see it because I'm going to be reviewing it, and it came down between that and White House Down. The Heat was a half hour shorter, so it won. And also, one of the perks of me being able to review movies a week later than their release, because of the way it works out in Pocatello, the newspaper, blah, 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 is that I can know what wins the weekend before I review something nobody else is going to see. Unless I insist on reviewing something less people see because I know it's going to be better. In this case, it was kind of a flip of the coin, so... The Heat is directed by Paul Feig, who did Bridesmaids, and he is reuniting with Melissa McCarthy, who was also in Bridesmaids, was nominated for an Oscar, inexplicably. Sandra Bullock, who won an Oscar, inexplicably, co-stars in the movie. They are an odd couple, buddy cop scenario. Sandra Bullock is the buttoned-up, by-the-book... Jack Lemmon of the group, I guess you would say. She doesn't know how to have fun. Nobody in the force likes her because she's a know-it-all, even though she's one of the best in New York City, working for the FBI. She is asked to take on a case in downtown Boston so that she can kind of prove herself and prove that she can work with other people and cooperate, and if she proves herself, she can get this promotion in New York City. So she moves into Boston to figure out a drug smuggling, drug ring mystery that's going on that is loosely involved with Melissa McCarthy's family. She is this loudmouth, filthy dialogue, complete, utter opposite, kind of bull in a china closet, you know, just rushes in and tortures people till she gets the information she wants. And obviously personalities clash until for no real reason at all they don't. And they decide to work together to figure out this case. And hilarity ensues, or it's supposed to. This is a really easy movie to review. Sandra Bullock, not funny. Melissa McCarthy, funny. That's it.
Okay.
I mean, if I could go into it a little bit more, you know, we've seen this plot 100 times. It's a buddy cop movie, and it does very similar things than we've seen in pretty much all of the Lethal Weapon movies or...
Does them being females add anything? Because I know that's
not really
kind of something they were shooting for.
Yeah, I think that's supposed to be the X factor here. And I'm not totally sold on this Paul Feig as, like, you know, the guy who's letting the women do their thing. You know, everyone was really like gung ho about Bridesmaids because they said, you know, finally there's a movie about women. And about their relationships. And that is a much better screenplay because that was written by Kristen Wiig. And she does talk a lot about relationships and stuff, but there is a lot of stuff in Bridesmaids that I don't think really worked all that well, and I think it's a pretty saggy movie. And this movie's even worse in that regard, and I think the screenplay is really throwaway. I think you could supplement these female characters for male characters very easily. In fact, that's all they did. And a lot of the jokes don't work. I mean, a lot of them fall very, very flat. Melissa McCarthy is so talented, and so her comedic timing and her comedic instincts are so right on that she is just dragging this movie to the finish line, you know, with sheer will, trying to keep you entertained while the rest of the boring movie around her is happening. So I kind of, in the end, I was like, you know, this is one of those movies, it's going to be on all summer long on HBO, and when you're at home, you'll, like, be flipping through, and you'll be in the middle of it, and you'll be able to watch, like, a half hour of it before you decide to go putt-putt golfing or whatever, and you'll be fine with not seeing the end, because you'll have already seen the movie in increments. But it's really just a movie, that's a platform for Melissa McCarthy to do her thing. And for that, it's fine. As a movie as a whole, it's not very good.
Okay, here we go.
So because you didn't want to review anything that came out this week, and I really don't blame you. And I just recently went out to go see The Bling Ring, when I was in Salt Lake City a few weeks ago. I said, you know, this is a movie I think you should go see. I think you would really like it, or at least be able to appreciate it. And we decided that we would save that discussion for this episode. Right. So I'll go ahead and let you set up The Bling Ring.
Sure. The Bling Ring is a movie by Sofia Coppola, and it has a young cast, including Miss Hermione. That's all I ever know her as. Emma Watson.
Yeah.
Which actually, I thought she was going to be the bigger part of it, but really, you really focus on these two young kids and their kind of budding relationship as teenagers. Uh-huh. And basically, these characters are basically they're rich and influential. One of them is played by Katie Chang, and she's plays the character of Rebecca, and then the other one is Israel Brossard. And then you've also got Emma Watson playing Nikki, and Teresa Fuminga playing a girl named Sam. And these characters, they really... it's funny to me because I always feel like these characters don't really exist, but then this is based on a real, like incident.
Yeah.
And basically these characters, what the plot is these are rich, you know, kids from rich families that basically are bored or so obsessed with, the star scene that they start breaking into their houses and stealing shit, so that they can party more.
Uh-huh.
And, on a whole, I think that the ideas of this film, are really persuasive and really just well done.
Uh-huh.
However, there's kind of... Sometimes I don't think that it was executed as well as good as the idea is. Sometimes I think it kind of falls flat. But all in all, I enjoyed it. I feel like... It was hard for me not to compare it to Spring Breakers, which we reviewed earlier this year.
Sure, sure.
And I thought Spring Breakers was much more stylish, definitely showcased its ideas a lot stronger.
Hmm.
And the further and further I got away from Spring Breakers, the more and more I liked that movie. Whereas this one, the more and more... it was definitely an easier movie to take in, but the more and more I get away from it, the more and more I go, it was okay. But, honestly, I think that, I think the cast did good. I just think it kind of lacked a little bit of energy.
Huh. All right. I really love this movie, actually. I know that basically it's getting mixed to negative reviews, so you're not too far from that.
Sure.
And I do see the comparisons to Spring Breakers, obviously, but I think, you know,
it's hard not to. I tried not to. That's what I would say.
I don't think it hurts either movie, though. I honestly, in a weird way, I see these as kind of sister movies. Because they're exploring a lot of the same themes, a lot of the same ideas, this sort of obsession with celebrity culture and MTV culture. But they're really expressing it in two different ways.
Right.
I thought this movie was fascinating in very strange ways. It was like watching Space Aliens for 2 hours. It was kind of like watching the characters, you know, from John Carpenter's They Live. And I think that the satire is that broad, which I think some it could make some people stumble with the movie. I think some people might be able to see that as being like, okay, it's too, the dialogue is just too stylized. These characters are too unrealistic, and their motivations seem too fuzzy or unreal, or you never know exactly what their moral stance is. But I think that's all the point. I think you're not supposed to relate to them. I think they're supposed to seem cold and distant and strange, because I think that that's the satire that Sofia Coppola is working with here. I think, you know, her themes in her movies, and this kind of follows along with it, is she, you know, for the most part, she's always sort of explored life and styles of the rich and famous. And she's really kind of, it's kind of weird, because I think stylistically, her and Harmony Korine kind of had a brain exchange.
Well, the whole gun thing in almost the middle of the movie, that was weird.
Yeah, that was a weird parallel for sure. But I mean, even beyond that, I mean, you know, Harmony, generally, his approach has always been more distant and more, you know, the satire is more up and front and center. And, you know, he's able to do terrible things to his characters because he has that distance. But with, I thought, with Spring Breakers, he was really exploring emotion and tones and all of this internal stuff, which felt more like something that Sofia Coppola would do. And in this movie, The Bling Ring, Sofia Coppola seems to take that distance approach. And rather than, you know, making these really impressionistic, emotive movies, like something like Somewhere, where there wasn't even dialogue for the first 20 minutes of the movie. In this movie, it's really kind of fast and snappy, and she really allows comedy to happen, a kind of dark comedy, especially with Emma Watson's character and her mother, played by Leslie Mann. And I think there is some hysterical stuff with those two.
And I don't think that this movie is, like, terrible. Don't get me wrong.
No, yeah, I'm not saying you are, but I mean, that distance does seem to be a stumbling block for you.
It's not the distance, necessarily. It just seems to lack kind of an energy to it at times. Like, some of the scenes kind of seem kind of almost static, and it's kind of like, okay. Like, they didn't do as much for me as I think that they... I actually do think that maybe it shouldn't have been as impersonal as it is. Maybe that was. Maybe you are correct about that. I had to kind of retrack there, because honestly, I couldn't put my finger on it, which is probably a good indication that this movie was, it felt like a breath of fresh air compared to a lot of tent poles we've been seeing lately. But I still didn't feel like, I felt like there was something missing a lot of the times, and I couldn't exactly put my finger on it. It might take me like some thinking on it or to see it again, and maybe it'll just click the next time, or maybe it'll become more apparent why I wasn't completely into it. But the other thing too is, I think you're right, I always forget that people like this in the world really do exist, and that's why there are a billion, you know, magazines that sell these star crap.
Well, that's kind of the interesting thing. I mean, you know, this whole plot of these teenagers who are already filthy rich, they do not need to steal anything. They are getting money out the wazoo from their parents as it is. But they, out of just sheer lack of empathy, they are, you know, stealing from these Hollywood stars and doing so in these very kind of creepy ways, using Google Maps and that kind of thing to see the weaknesses in their houses and looking online on their Twitters and whatnot to know when they're not going to be home, because they, these stars like Paris Hilton you know, Kim Kardashian and these Orlando Bloom and these type of people, these shallow, celebrities who are famous for nothing. It's not even that they want to be them. It's that they want, they want to embody their world. They want to embody that kind of, I don't know, shameless opulence, I guess. Like
they want to be a part of that, roll in that same kind of a crowd, be that same kind of a person. I think that they do kind of want to be the, I don't think they necessarily want to be them exactly. I think they want to be, you know, be in the same part of, you know, be in the same world that they are.
Yeah. Occupy their world, even if it's doing so in this shady way. But they seem so cognizant of that. I mean, at one point, they're, you know, throughout the movie, one of the main kids is being interrogated, and every once in a while his voiceover comes in. And every once in a while, that voiceover is a little too on the nose. Right. When he starts to explicate the subtext, I don't like it when movies do that. But there's then I kind of stop and realize, it's like, what if that's the point also? Like, what if he's just saying what he knows everyone wants to hear? He, you know, oh, yes, we stole from them because clearly we want to be part of their world in some way or another. We just didn't care how. Can I go now? Like,
no, I mean, there's definitely that. You get that sense because even Emma Watson, you know, what she says to the camera versus what she says behind the scenes. Sofia Coppola definitely, she definitely made a point about that. She also made a point, the one blonde girl, the one that wasn't necessarily one of
the group members.
She was kind of more Chloe played by Claire Julian. There's a part where she's, you know, they're drinking and driving and she gets in this accident.
Yeah.
She gets, you know, all they do is they show her mugshot and the next day she's at school. Uh-huh.
But interestingly enough, you see that mugshot and then later in the movie you see other mugshots, and even those are shot to look like photo shoots. You know, you don't see the white lines in the background, and even though her face is all beat up, it's like done in this like Vogue magazine style. The whole movie, like you could take any one shot from the movie and put it in the cover of People magazine or in Vogue or in 17. Like it's, I don't know. I actually think that the satire in this movie might be even more subversive than Spring Breakers. And doing almost maybe even doing something a little bit more clever with it, because I think these characters at their core, even when they're supposedly apologizing or even when they know they've been caught or even when they're bragging about what they've done to school, it's like they are at their core shallow. They are nothing. They have no substance at all as people. Whereas you get the idea.
See, and I think that's painting in broad strokes, because maybe that's why I like Spring Breakers more, is because they did show variation in the characters, and they did all have a different personality, and
they were a little bit more emotionally rooted, because it's more of an emotional movie.
Well, they also, besides emotionally rooted, they were more real people.
But
where these characters to me seem, like you said, space aliens.
I mean,
and I'm not necessarily grabbing onto them, but what I'm seeing is we're talking about real teens versus
the fictional ones from Spring Breakers. I mean, and the ones from Spring Breakers feel more like real people.
Oh,
But I think that's kind of fascinating. I mean, I think this is.
I don't think it's, but I don't know if it's fair to say that it's more clever. That's where I'm.
Well, maybe clever isn't the right word, but maybe it's more hidden. It's less, the satire is a little bit more, you have to fish for it. Because I think if you're a 15-year-old girl watching this movie, you'll get that the idea that these are kids that are getting in over their heads, but it's going to take a few more years of kind of growing up with the movie before you really get all these layers of satire. And I think, even beyond satire, I think there's almost a political statement here about, you know, this is the 1%, and this is their mindset. They have absolutely no empathy. That's why they don't care if they trample on people lower than them, because they don't exist to them.
Well, I wouldn't say it was people lower than them, because that factor doesn't even really.
No, and you don't see a world lower than them. They're so, whether it's online or in school or these houses they're going to, their world is a fantasy land for most people.
Yeah, and they're so absorbed in it to think that that's.
I mean, when.
Well, I thought it was also funny, because, I mean, you also, we were talking about. going back to, because one of the more, you know, brilliant parts of this were the scenes between Emma Watson and Lisa, or at least the more fun.
Yeah.
I won't say more brilliant, but the scenes between Emma Watson and Lisa Lamann, where she's like teaching her the secret religion or whatever.
They're like kind of pseudo new agey non-religion. Yeah.
Thing.
And they're doing like spirit boards and stuff. I mean, some of that stuff is really broadly comedic, but it really sort of works in this movie. And Leslie Mann is a character actress that I've always kind of found a little shrill sometimes, even when you're supposed to like her in like those Apatow movies. But I felt like they pitched her exactly perfect in this movie.
Oh, I usually like her. That goes back to your question though. George of the Jungle is probably one of those movies I liked as a kid. And,
wouldn't quite work for you now.
probably.
I don't think Leslie Mann wants to be remembered for George of the Jungle.
Maybe I should go. Oh, I remember her in that very.
I'm sure you do.
But
yeah,
let's not get into that now. Back to the Bling Ring. I found, like I said, my part of the review when I first led into it, like I said, I found. Well, at first I found Emma Watson's rendition of the character. I was like, and then I was like, no, this does work. Oh no, this really is real, with her specifically, and then with kind of the back and forth between her and her mom, and then the real world.
Uh huh.
How she actually acted in front of the teens, but then I wasn't so sure about the kid that played Mark. That might have been something that was kind of distracting to me as well. I didn't really.
Well, he's supposed to be sort of the audience surrogate. He's sort of a cipher character.
Yeah.
But again, it's...
And I would say he's one of the least strong of the entire cast. That's part of the problem for me, probably.
I don't think you would want somebody more charismatic than that, though, because I think if you brought in, like, you know, somebody on, like, say, like a Joseph Gordon-Levitt kind of scale or something like that, somebody who's really going to command a lot of screen presence... It's that wishy-washiness of the character that makes it believable. It's this idea that these, I don't necessarily believe that people like this really exist, but or that these characters that, you know, that really were there were anything like this, maybe even, but what she's doing with the movie, what she's saying is that if the advertising to teenagers worked the way they hope it does, this is how all teenagers would be. This is the, I mean, you can't, it's almost like, you know, they're a product of their culture, obviously, but it's, you know, when you look at the way that teen culture is marketed, or adult culture is marketed to teens, or vice versa, teen culture is marketed to adults now, this is how they wish everybody would consume their stuff, that you loved, you know, Real Housewives so much that you went and robbed from them when they weren't home. Like, it's, I don't know. I was really taken by this movie, and it took a little bit of thinking on it to kind of come to that conclusion, because I do get that there is something kind of cold and distant and pretty cynical in the tone. But that's not
those aren't the reasons for me that draw me away.
Yeah.
Minus some of the performances. I don't think you're saying you, well, I didn't want him more charismatic. I agree. I don't want him more charismatic. I didn't think he was very, I just didn't think he was very good. Period. I think he could have been more nebbish. I think he could have been more anything.
Yeah.
I thought his, you know, his youth and his naivety towards the character was very visible. As well as, like I said, I don't feel like there's a very good energy in the film, and parts where I feel like there could be more energy. There could be more of a rawness to it. And I just think that the ideas in it, the ideas that you're talking about, I think are some of them are ones that I didn't completely consider. But at the same time, I liked the ideas in the film a lot more than I liked the follow through of the film.
Okay.
And that was my problem with the film. So I guess I can't necessarily agree with you that it's, this great satire, because I don't really feel like it was executed as well as it could have been.
Okay. But we'll move on now to our Netflix homework, which I assigned you last week, with the Duplass brothers, the Dodecapentathlon, which they directed and put out the same year they did Jeff Who Lives at Home, which is arguably their most commercial film. Dodeca is definitely one of those movies. It's kind of like they had a hole in their schedule, so they just grabbed some friends, some actor friends together, and kind of made one of their old mumblecore style movies like they used to make. And it's about two brothers, as all their movies are generally about two brothers, who are very competitive. They live di very different lives. One of them is a lot more reserved and kind of a family man. The other one is sort of a drifter, and he kind of floats back in, looking to kind of reconnect with his family. But the only way he really understands how to do that is to start up this competitive stuff that he's been doing with his brother for years, decades. And in the form of a pentathlon that's scored by very specific rules that they have written down when they were kids, where they're supposed to complete X amount of mini games and see who wins. Their relationship has almost been destroyed by this pentathlon in the past, and the wife of the family man of the two, played by our Steve Zissou, she's worried that if they start these games that they'll never be able to get back on track, so they have to figure out a way to play these games behind her back. And that's kind of basically the movie in a nutshell. What did you think of the Dodecapentathlon?
It's kind of funny, these mumblecore movies. What always happens at the very start of the movie, I'm like, ah, it's weirdly framed and it's kind of shaky and I'm not sure about it. But then by the end, I'm kind of like, I don't know, I'm kind of like weirdly involved in the the personal nature of the films. And to be honest, I really dug this little movie. It was very, they have the ability, I mean, to get very personal and kind of in depth, and by the end I forgot that it wasn't shot very well and it was very digital looking and all that jazz. But to me it was very interesting, kind of the ideas of that kind of sibling rivalry, and or like, that's kind of brought on. But then also it was interesting to kind of see. It was funny because at first I thought it was going to be about this film about these two brothers kind of fighting, but it was really about these two brothers, kind of being jealous of each other, and that's where the real conflict comes in. The drifter really wants kind of the family more, whereas the family man's like, I want to be able to go off and do whatever the hell I want. And where you really get more of the antagonism is between it later in the film is between the wife and the husband.
Which,
And
even
so,
some of those themes, I think, have been explored in other Duplass movies, specifically Jeff Who Lives at Home, which they did the same year. And even up through the Puffy Chair. And a lot of these other mumblecore movies always kind of follow a similar pattern of sort of the reckless one and the laced up one. But I thought this movie was so warm and so good-hearted and so well-intended that even if it's kind of a small movie and not plot-wise really happens throughout it, its characters are so well pitched, and the at least the emotional quality of the characters seem realistic enough, even though it's kind of a almost cartoony plot, you could say, that it just sort of
no, it
wins you
does, but
over.
it does seem more real though too, in a lot of ways. I mean, I
I
agree
mean
with
you
you. I mean, everybody wants to be, you know, Brad Pitt, but usually we end up, you know, like Danny DeVito. But I mean, the point of this is I really liked kind of the, I really like when they get into this family dynamics, and they are warm-hearted. It's very weird.
Yeah.
Because like I said, at the first of the films, I'm usually almost always like, oh, this is stupid. And then by like 10 minutes in, I'm pretty much sucked into like, oh, this is happening in their family. Oh, this is a family dynamic. Oh, this is going on. So.
Yeah, and it's a, sort of a, you know, comment on their talent that they're able to do that. They're able to, I mean, obviously their movies are very actor-friendly, and you know, they're well known for a lot of improv, and you know, they kind of work out the scenes with a loose script, and they kind of hash the scenes out as they go, kind of in a John Cassavetes, Mike Lee sort of way. But they get some great performances that way, and I think even when their movies on a plot level are either boilerplate or ridiculous, you believe in their characters enough that you just kind of go with it.
Agreed.
What do you have for me next week, Richard?
Well, next week we're going to be watching the movie Iron Sky about space Nazis.
Yes. I've heard a lot about the production of this movie. I've never seen it. I think it was one of those weird things where it was kind of a cult movie before it even came out.
Right.
So I'll be excited to see what that's all about. It seems like it might have been made for Netflix.
I've seen random posts, and that's about it. I guess people like it, so let's hope so.
Yeah, it'll probably definitely be interesting to talk about it, in the very least.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Well, that pretty much wraps us up on this episode. So if anybody, any of our listeners, have anything to say about The Bling Ring, The Heat, the Dodeca Pentathlon, or any movies, what movies did you grow out of? Did you think that Natural Born Killers was a life-defining moment for you, and then 4 years later you hated it, or vice versa? You know, that'd be an interesting discussion topic for any of our listeners. Or if you just have any more you want to say about me in the yellow hat, you can get in contact through us to our email, which is jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also see what the hell I'm talking about and contact us through our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/jabberpodcast. Like us there, and you can see any news items we post when we put up new episodes and join in the conversation. You can sub or stream us at our Podbean archives, which is jabberinthedrone.podbean.com. You can also find us on iTunes, where you can subscribe to us there, which makes it a lot easier for a lot of other people. And if you would like to, and it would be much appreciated, if you could write us just a little bit of a review, a couple sentences or two, and a star rating to help others find us. Just go to the iTunes store, type in Jabber and the Drone. We should pop up under podcasts. You can read my weekly movie reviews that I do for the Idaho State Journal or for the Basic Alternative at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com or jhub.com/reviews. You can also see some content that I've written for the Seattle-based MacGuffinPodcast.com. I got nothing for you, Richard.
Yeah, he's got nothing for me.
It's too hot. Damn hot. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.